thank you. Okay, so so this is a short graduate course on L infinity algebras. So I assume that you really don't know anything about these things, so I will go into a lot of detail. So today my main goal is to define what they are. So let me start. So let me just start by giving the definition, and I'll try to explain this later. Okay. So definition. So first of all, you have a Z-graded vector space over the complex numbers. Say L, so and then you have a sequence of operations on L, so every k greater than or equal to 1, mu k goes from lambda k L to L, of degree 2 minus k, and subject to some relations which are a little bit involved to write them down, but okay, I'll do that. I'll write them down several times in different contexts. So notation might change occasionally. So for every n greater than or equal to 1, we have this following equation. So we have a sine L plus 1 times n minus L plus 1. Then we have the sum over all sigma in SH of L n minus L. So these are so-called unshuffles. So these are certain subset of permutations of n numbers. So if sigma, so let me write this sigma. That means that you have the first L of these, sigma 1 through sigma L, and is just a subset of the numbers from 1 through N with L elements, but in their natural order. And then sigma of L plus 1 through sigma of N is just the rest of these numbers which are left over also in their natural order, because they're as a subset of 1 through n. So that's this indexing set here. And then I have a certain sign. Let's call it epsilon tilde of sigma and V. Okay, V. So here comes one of these operations, mu n minus l plus 1, evaluated at mu l of okay, so I'm already running out of space here. So in other words, I take n elements here. For every n, I take n elements in my L infinity algebra L. Right? Then I take L of them and apply mu L to that. That's this here. And then I wedge that together with. Then I multiply that with the rest of them. V sigma L plus 1 wedge V sigma. N. So that is n minus l of them plus one more of them, so I can apply mu n minus l plus 1 to that. So this combination is supposed to be 0, so there's this sign depending on l, and then there's this sign depending on this unshuffle and on the element v, so let me explain that sign. So first of all, maybe I should well. Well, so there's this alternating product of L. So this is a quotient of the k tensor product of L with itself, so always over the ground field C, so the greater tensor product. And well, it's a quotient where we force certain equations to hold. So the equations are that x, well, well, let's start just with k equals 2 to get started. So x1 equals 2 has to be equal to minus okay, so let me explain. So x1 and x2 are an L, and whenever I write this, I mean the homogeneous elements. and so whenever I write minus 1 to the power of some element here, I really mean just the degree. So I'm just so if I want to switch x1 and x2, I have to multiply by the sign because we're in the graded case, and then I have the extra minus sign because I'm in the alternating case, not in the symmetric case. And more generally, x sigma 1 wedge x sigma n is then this explains the sign here. Oh, well. Okay, so I switched from V to X here, so I'm doing this guy here. So So when I switch the order of these things, I get a bunch of minus signs here, and how many do I get? That's the sign of the permutation. So there's the sign of this permutation. And then each time I've switched the order of two elements, I get one of these guys here. So this is the sum over all elements where I is less than j, but sigma of I is greater than sigma of j. And then it's xi, xj. Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Okay, so now I think I've explained all the ingredients in this formula, but of course that's just a long, big formula, and maybe as an example here, so if mu k is equal to zero for all k greater than or equal to 3, then an L infinity algebra is called a differential graded Lie algebra. So graded, of course, because it's graded, and then usually one writes D for mu 1, the first guy here, and bracket for mu 2, and then what does these relations mean in this case? I have this written down somewhere. Right. So let's look at just n equals 1. I mean, okay, n equals 1, there's only one sum end here, and n is equal to 1, there's only one of these permutations here. And so you see that you get L is going to be 1, and n minus L plus 1 is also going to be 1, so it's mu 1 applied to mu 1 of the general element. So this means mu 1 of B is equal to 0. So mu 1 squared is 0. That's always the first equation, of course. So this translates into D squared is equal to 0, so that D is a differential. And that justifies that name. N is equal to 2. I'm going to get to science. I'm just going to rewrite this in these terms, right? Okay, let's write this down. So this translated from the mu language into D and the bracket. Mm-hmm. So it's D applied to the bracket of V1 and V2 is DV1 bracket V2 plus minus 1 to the V1, V2, DV2, and V1. Right, there's the case for L equals 1. This is mu 2 applied to mu 1 of one element and another element. So that's the bracket applied to this and the bracket applied to that. And then for L equals 2, we have mu 1 applied to mu 2 of a pair. So that gives me that. And if you work out the signs, this is what you get. Or you can rewrite this as maybe a more common way to write it is dv1 v2 plus minus 1 So that means that D is a derivation with respect to this bracket. And of course that's again always the case for any L infinity algebra. I didn't use the fact that mu k is equal to 0. So then n equals 3. So the L equals 1 terms gives me mu 3. Right, I have to apply mu 3, and then I get all these unshuffles, 1, 2 unshuffles. So I have to take V1, and then I have to take V1 applied to V2. And V1, V3, right, just, and then plus mu 3, mu 1, V3, V1, V2. And picking out this thing here picks out right one element among 1 through n. And so that's how this works. And I have to put in the correct signs here. So this was V1 times V2 plus V3. Right, this is the case where L equals 1. This sign is even, and so I just have to put in that sign. And so, you work it out. So then the L equals 2 terms are mu 2 of mu 2, V1, V2, and V3. So this time I have to pick out two element subsets of the three. So let me try to put the sign well. Okay. So now it's V2, V3, and V1, and then mu 2 of mu 2. So now this is this sign here is V1, V2 plus V3, and this is V3 times V1 plus V2. And then the last term, then I have the N equals 3 term, so it's mu1 of mu3. So, and then there's only one possibility. So we'll only get one term there. I think I wanted to say V3, V1. Yeah, you're right. This is the way. Yeah, this is bad. I didn't write this as the unshuffle. The unshuffle should be 1, 3, V2. But then I rewrote this because I wanted to write this then as a cycle. Yeah, what I wrote here, yeah. So I think. If I got this correct, I think I did this correct. So, yeah. Yeah, of course. And at some point, I'll start ignoring the signs because. But anyway, so in the case where. Well, this is the general thing. But now if mu3 is equal to 0, then we just get that. Then the first line and the last line doesn't contribute, and we only have. So let me write this v1, v2, v3 plus cycle these around with the correct signs is equal to 0. So that's the greater Jacobi identity. But if mu3 is not equal to 0, so that's the differential graded Lie algebra. So you just have the differential. So d squared is equal to 0, and it's a derivation with respect to the Lie bracket. And the Lie bracket satisfies the Jacobi identity. If mu3 is not equal to 0, the proper way to rewrite this is as d. I can write the. I want to replace mu1 by d, and then. This is essentially d of mu3, I think with a minus sign, is equal to this. So that this Jacobi identity here is satisfied up to d of some higher this higher operation mu3. So this thing d of mu3 that you should think of, apply d to mu3, which is written here, and then apply mu3 to d. That's the first line, but there's three contributions. Right? First do mu3, and then mu1 applies to 1 of. Okay, now I want to reformulate this so I have to introduce the So this is the symmetric powers. I talked about the alternating ones, so the symmetric powers, which also people write with this circle with a dot inside. So this is on the same definition as the lambda KL. The only difference is that we don't have this sign here in front. So with epsilon in particular x1. So, well, some people write for the symmetric product this kind of symbol, but I think it's too cumbersome and just write x1 dot x2 or just x1, x2. Well, and so that is just minus 1 to the degree x1 degree x2 times x2, x1. So without that extra minus sign there. Okay, and then so there is a so-called décalage. Okay, so V shifted by one. That is shift to the left by one. So so technically this is V sorry, let's say C one tensor V, so where C1 is just C in degree minus 1 and 0 everywhere else. So there's a canonical isomorphism between these two things. So V shifted by 1, the symmetric product is the same as just the alternating product of V and then shifted by N. Well, and to get these things right, so X1 shifted by 1, this is the same, this is X1 in the shifted guy. And so if I write this symmetric product of these guys here, that corresponds to certain sign. So summation I from 1 to n, n minus I, xi, okay, so basically, you have to think, well, it's a little bit unfortunate, the notation, because, well, I'm following, one of the references that I gave for this course is by Manetti. I'm following this convention so that this thing is written on the left here, but the shifts are written on the right. So really, you should think of them as on the left, not on the right, and that explains the sign here. So moving these ones past the x's gives this sign. Anyway. And this one too, you think of on the left. So that's why I'm moving a one past x1. So that's why x1 altogether there will be, I have to move n ones past x1, right? Oh my God, did I? Okay, so now I have to. So under this isomorphism, so the. Okay, if I think of nu k as going from this shift to this shift, then this has degree plus 1. All right, the degree of nu k was 2 minus k, so now this, so I'm writing 1 minus k, so this has degree plus 1 as a map from here to here. So under this isomorphism, this corresponds to a map I call qk. So, so the mu k correspond to qk. Degree plus 1. So all the QK all have the same degree. Plus 1. And so the relation is given like this. So QK of the relation between the mu's and the q's. And then okay, so I guess the original relations for the mu's are gone now, but so in the terms of the q's, the same sum from L equals 1 to N for the same unshuffles. I don't have this overall sign anymore, and I don't have the tilde sign, I have the epsilon, the usual symmetric sign. But otherwise, everything is the same. Now, but the correct way to think of these is comes as follows. So now I want to introduce a co-algebra. So, so the symmetric co-algebra on V, so this is just the sum over all n at least 1 of the symmetric powers of V. So I'm leaving out n equals 0. That's very important. So it's not the usual symmetric algebra that. And so there's a co-algebra structure on this. That just means that we have a map. From this co-algebra to the co-algebra tensored with itself, or with C. So this map is called delta. And it's just given by the following formula, x1. So if I have a symmetric tensor here, x1 through xn, sum from L equals 1 to N over the unshuffles of type L and minus L. I have to put the sign. And then QL. Sorry, this is the wrong formula. So I have the symmetric tensor, and I want to define an element in here. So I have to split this up into an element here and then tensor with an element there. So I do that in all possible ways. I just choose the first L of them in some way and put them in the correct order here. And then I have the other ones. So sigma L plus 1 x sigma n. And sum over everything with the correct sign. Yeah, then the map's zero. That map is zero. So indeed, that's delta, and then the sequence of these operations QK define a co-derivation on I'm back to the L infinity algebra, so I should use letter L. So this thing is called capital Q. And so the formula here. One through xn. Okay, I have to define a new element in here. So summation L equals 1 to n minus 1 sum over all these unshuffles with the sign epsilon. Oh god, now I'm down here. So sorry, This was n. That one should have been n minus 1. Right? For n equals 1, it was the empty sum. For l equals 2, that's, n is equal to 2. So. Here it goes to n. Okay. And well, what does it mean to be a co-derivation? So that just means so the property of being a co-derivation, so in general, if A is a co-algebra, and I have a map Q from A to A, and I have the co-algebra structure delta, and so here's the map Q tensor 1 plus 1 tensor Q. So you can check that that this Q that I've defined there is a co-derivation. And then proposition is that the L infinity relations, which are written up there, are equivalent to. So the whole point of all this reformulation is that now it's just this property that Q squared is equal to zero. I don't know, maybe maybe I will I'll skip the proof. I mean, I've written down all the things I'm just writing down. I mean, okay, so I'll skip the proof. Well, I guess I should give maybe a few examples. So, first one, as I already mentioned, DGE algebra, a differential graded Lie algebra is an L infinity algebra, right? All the higher ones are zero. So just as an example, which is important in applications, this is my main so let's say we have a complex of vector spaces over the complex numbers. And let's say G is the endomorphism space of E. So E is this complex. So that means GI is the degree I endomorphisms of E. So these are maps of degree I. But they're not required to satisfy any compatibility with D. So maps of degree I without any compatibility with D. Just maps of braided vector spaces. Okay, then, so I want to turn this into a differential graded Lie algebra. So I'm going to define a differential of degree plus 1, right? Mu 1 has degree 1. So this is, if I have such an endomorphism, I map it to the commutator with phi, with d. So if I if I first apply d and then phi and then subtract off so d composed with phi minus I have to put the sign here. Well, then I get a map in GI plus one. And the commutator is the Lie bracket. So this has degree 0 if I'm okay. And so then I want to jazz this up a little bit. So let's say Y complex, let's say for simplicity, smooth algebraic variety. And let's say this is a complex of vector bundles. And then we write this G, this endomorphism algebra. So this is a and a sheaf of DG Lie algebras on Y. Let's say U is an affine open cover. So now I want to get a global differential graded Lie algebra out of this. And so I look at the check coefficient. Code change with respect to this open cover, so now that's doubly graded. And then Li. That's a direct sum of all these guys. And then I define a differential. This is so take the check differential, and that's the differential on on G. This defines a differential. And then for the bracket, standard way. So if phi is a P cochain and psi a Q cochain, so these have these bidegrees, then the bracket of phi and psi, so I have to tell you what this is at an indexing set I0 to IP plus Q. So I restrict phi to this, or I take phi at I0 through IP. And I restrict it to this further intersection. So this is the usual formula, P IP. That should be familiar from the definition of the cup product in Czech cohomology. And then M get get a DGV algebra. So, for example, if you could have that this is a resolution of a certain coherent sheaf F, I can, of course, whenever I have a different integrated Lie algebra, I have the differential, I can take the cohomology. And then this guy computes the X groups of F with itself. So just to indicate that, so this is, and gives the deformation theory. Well, this is no, because Y is separated, so all intersections are affine, so I don't have to do anything fancy. Have to explain another example, which is sort of at the opposite extreme of this previous one. So that was a differential graded Lie algebra, which occurs in algebraic geometry. Now I want to give an example of the L-infinity algebra. So what is the most basic situation? So L-infinity algebra. Okay, so the most basic thing you do in algebraic geometry, you have F1 through FR, say, finite number of polynomials in n variables. And let's say that these don't have a constant term, these polynomials, so that just means that the origin is in the variety defined by FR. So this is a pointed variety, and so so what is the associated L infinity algebra? Well, which doesn't depend only on the variety, but really on these polynomials defining the variety. So how do I do this? So V0 is Cn. Let's put it, yeah. And V1 is Cr. And so when I put a subscript 1, that really means a superscript minus 1, so this this sits in degree 0 and that in degree minus 1. And so then I let A be the symmetric algebra on V. So so I will try to be consistent that if I write symmetric algebra, I mean what I usually think of the symmetric algebra, namely including the zero symmetric power. So this is all right, and if I write the circle with a dot, I mean the one without. Okay. So what does that look like? So first of all, there's a symmetric algebra of this vector space Cn. This is all sitting in degree 0, so that's a polynomial ring on in n variables, so that's that. So and a minus 1, so that so these all have degree 0 because it's a symmetric algebra on this all this stuff in degree 0. And okay, so this is let me write it like this: C1 plus CR. So these are just formal symbols, C1 through CR. So this is, in other words, the basis of CR. A minus R right, and that's all there is. So that's what A looks like. So I can define a map by sending Ci to Fi. Right, this is the polynomial ring, so the Fi's are in there, and call that D, and extend that. So extend D to derivation in a unique way. and now what you get is usually an algebra called the causal complex of these polynomials F1 through FR. So that's a very well-known object. Okay, so this is a derivation on an algebra, so if I take duals, I should get a co-derivation on the dual. And that should give me the R infinity algebra, so so how does that work? So so I put this V, so this V. Okay, so if I just take the linear parts in all these polynomials, so these, right, I split them up, these polynomials, into all their homogeneous parts. So this is just a linear. Excuse me? Second. Oh, that's just, yeah, well, okay. This, I mean, this vector space in degree zero, that vector space in degree minus one, and just the great, this graded vector space, right? I'm already sort of used that here. right, this V1 here has the basis C1 through CR. And I'm sending these CIs to these polynomials, which are in the symmetric algebra on V0. So I split every one of these up into all its various homogeneous pieces. And so I get the linear part of VF of these polynomials and do some maps here to there, and the quadratic part of these of all these polynomials give a map from V1 to symmetric power 2, and so on. Right, this, I get these guys. So and I take duals. So the dual of the symmetric power is the symmetric power of the dual because everything's finite dimensional. So I get all these operations here, and then I have to define L, my L infinity algebra. So this is going to be I don't know how to write this. So L so put V0 dual in degree 1 and V1 dual in degree 2. So in other words, if I write on L1, that would shift them down into degree 0 and 1. So that is the dual of this graded vector space V. Right? This is in degree minus 1 and 0. If I take the dual, it goes... Okay, so... so the operations on V dual that I got here, right, they're all of degree 1, because this D is of degree 1. So that's right. So A was a symmetric algebra on V. Now I write B is the thing without the degree zero part. So this thing, as I explained earlier in the lecture, is a co-algebra. I wrote down the formula for this delta. And so there's a canonical map from here to there. So whenever I have some tensor expression, symmetric tensor in some linear forms. I can define a linear form on this guy. This is a canonical map there. And so here's the dual of the multiplication. So here's like the same canonical map. And then there's a canonical map there. Okay, and you check that this commutes. And these guys are injective here. So I defined all these operations up there. So these are these QIs here. They combine to give this co-derivation Q. Okay, and so this also commutes. I also have to check that. So you get an L infinity algebra just by taking this dual. So that's okay. Of course, this is automatically, there's really just by and I didn't have to put any conditions on these polynomials to define this where is it? It's gone by now. To define that differential graded algebra. So all the L infinity relations are also vacuous in this case, actually, but still. Okay, but so these are the two extremes, but somehow we want to, we have to get from one to the other and compare them. So that's what I have to explain next. So okay. So now there's the. Well, let me just make a remark. So if X is some moduli space, for example, the moduli space of coherent sheaves, so then I wrote down this differential graded Lie algebra, which defines the deformation theory of this moduli problem. So let's say we really should be considering the pointed moduli space. So for example, the point on a moduli space could be a fixed coherent sheaf on a fixed variety Y. And so right then we get a differential graded Lie algebra. And we also want X to be a scheme, and so we would like to write X, you know, at least locally in terms of equations in some affine space. So X is a scheme. And so we get this other kind of L infinity algebra, and we want to get from one to the other. So this other. So the main thing here is called transfer. So there's a theorem. So I take an L infinity algebra with all these, so those mu k's, all these higher operations. So and I always write d for mu 1. Let eta from L to L be a map of degree minus 1. Right, so d is of degree plus 1. Eta is of degree minus 1, satisfying two conditions. First of all, eta squared is 0. And secondly, eta d eta is equal to eta. So there's two extreme cases to keep in mind here. Of course, eta could be 0, right? L is a complex with respect to d. So if we split this Li, which is just a c vector space, into the boundaries, so plus say hi. Plus, and so these bi and zi are the boundaries with boundaries and the boundaries and the cycles, or co-boundaries and co-cycles with respect to d. So I can split off a complement to the cycles, and then inside the cycles to the boundaries another complement. So let's call that ki here. Just split that off, and then d induces. If I didn't make any mistakes, an isomorphism from ki to di plus 1, and just q be the inverse. Well, maybe q is not a, well, anyway, and then right, so I've written L as direct sum of these three things, so eta will be a 3x3 matrix, and I just take the inverse of this guy here, Q, and that gives me this eta map, which is also another example. Okay, so first of all, I mean, some trivial remarks here, and this is not really the theorem. Maybe I should put that on the sideboard. So let's compute the square of the commutator of d and eta. So you see, eta and d both are odd. They're both odd. D is plus 1, eta has degree minus 1. So when I compute the commutator, I have to change the sign again, so I get plus. Right, so this is that. So that's the commutator. So I'm doing the commutator twice. So I get d eta, d eta, then d eta plus eta d. So eta squared is 0, so that term vanishes. D squared is 0, so that term vanishes. And then I have plus n eta d eta d. And by this equation that eta d eta is eta, so this is an idempotent, and so the same is true for pi. Satisfies pi squared equals pi. So these are two projection operators, and so I'll define m to be pi of L. And the inclusion map I'll call eta, and the projection map is P. Okay. So this M is a graded subspace of L. Pi is by definition the identity minus the commutator of d and eta. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that was, of course, thanks. Okay, so now now the point is I want to define as follows. So the claim in this theorem is what I'm going to write down now is an L infinity structure. So so this is a little complicated. So first of all, we define for every t. So t is a rooted tree. So that every internal vertex has valence at least 2. So valence, I always mean the incoming edges. So number of incoming edges at least 2. UT. So for every such tree, I define an operation from M, from M to M of this degree here. And so I'll just, rather than try to give a mathematically rigorous definition, I'll just give you some example, and that should be clear then. So for example, here's such a tree. So down here's the root, and up here are the leaves of the tree. And here, so the internal vertices are these guys here, and there's always the valence, so always at least 2 incoming edges. So I forgot to say. So these are rooted trees, labeled rooted trees. So labeled means that the leaves are labeled. So 1, 2, three, four, say. So they're labeled by. Yeah. No, not planar. Of course, now what I'm writing down here, so Q. Okay, so then I put an iota on each of the leaves and a P at the root, so those are these two guys here. And then I put a mu at each internal vertex. You put a mu, and well, you put the, so in this case they're all mu twos because there's always two incoming guys. If there's three incoming guys, you put mu three, etc. And all the internal edges, you put an eta. So there's eta and eta. And so then this kind of diagram defines this operation here. So in this case, so you do P of mu 2 of eta of mu 2 of iota of x1 iota of x3. So this iota of x1 and iota of x3 combined with mu 2. And then there's eta mu 2 of iota x2 and iota x4. I'm not sure I can give you the correct sign. All the references I could find were extremely sloppy. I mean, either they didn't write down the sign, or the sign was incomprehensible. So I'm not going to give you the sign. You have to put, right? There's many ways of you know, when I'm writing this down, I'm actually making this a planar tree. I'm actually embedding it into the plane to write this down. So it's important that you choose the correct sign there. And then you define new n the sum of all the trees with n leaves of new t. So the claim in this theorem is that this that these nus, so the claim excuse me?
The exterior power should be applied to I see through that.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess I'm going to do the general proof next time, but let me give you an example. Where is this example? Right there. Well, I don't know what n is equal to 3. So where is the last one? So new three, I'm supposed to sum over all these trees with three leaves. So there's this tree here, one, two, three. And then, well, I'm ignoring all the signs, so so then we have this tree here, one, two, three. And I'm summing over labeled trees. So there's three ways to label this tree. So there's I put the three by itself, the two by itself, or the one by itself. So here I have one, three, and there I have one, two, three. And then I have to put the eta here. And all the other ones are you know, as up there. So there's no eta here. So the trick is to write down new three hat. So the hat means put an extra D on every single edge. So whenever I put a vertex here on one of these leaves, I put there a D automatically. So there's eta. And I put the D there. And then I put the D there, so the eta is there. And then I put the D there, the eta is there. And then I have another possibility there. One, two, three, and then there. So this is for one of these trees. I have one, two, three, four, five. So one, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. right. So there's three places I can put a D here and three there. So that's what I did here. So that there's a D eta and a eta D. And then, of course, I'm writing this down for this tree, and then for that tree, and then for that tree. So this whole thing is actually written there three times. Then you have to remark that. Of course, I should have written down what the claim is. So this is the this is nu, and so d of nu is supposed to be equal to so this is well, I shouldn't say too much now because I'm running out of time. So So because this is the same as, maybe I should write it like this. This is really the claim that D of the operation with three inputs is written as these, right? This is the Jacobi identity here, right? With the nus. Now the thing is that the news always have a P coming out at the end, a P coming out here, and an I coming in, and P composed with I is pi. So that's why this guy on the right hand side is these guys with a pi on the labels there, and then I've just written out the definition of new here and as this sum of these things there. Right, so that's the claim, and so I claim that I can prove that just by looking at this stuff here. So So the main point is that so the D of this thing is obtained by putting the D on each of the external edges. Right? So D on the external edges is basically written here and everywhere here except for here, where D is on the internal edge. But on the internal edge, here I have D eta plus eta D. And D eta plus eta D is 1 minus pi. So, I'm just trying to give you... So this sum here is this minus this. And instead of D eta plus eta D, I put 1 minus pi. And so... So all this other stuff here is the left-hand side, and there's the right-hand side is these with a pi, and so what's left is these guys with a 1. They cancel out because if you look at I never really said that the whole thing actually the point is here that I have to use the L infinity relations for nu itself, so for the original mu. So if I look at this thing here, that is, and I use the L infinity relation for mu, this thing is d mu, right? There's mu and at the vertex, and there's d written on all the external edges. So I can replace that by... and that's going to cancel these ones here, and I'm left with this thing here, and that's going to prove this equation if you think about it, because the other thing you have to use is that this nu 3